Hey everybody, welcome to Snapcast. I'm Alex.
And I'm Rob.
And it's just the two of us.
It's like that time in Baltimore.
We don't talk about that. Nobody has to know.
Oh, my bad.
No, Bobby just moved, so he's busy with that still. Chris has got work stuff, and Jerry just had mouth surgery. So we're a little strapped, so it's just me and Rob, you know, feeling it out, feeling each other out.
I think we're going to do well.
All right, what have you been up to, Rob?
I've been playing a lot of Magic Online. I bought up a standard deck, talked about that last week, and I found a new modern deck I'm going to be trying out, the Titan Scapeshift list. Mm-hmm. And what's great is I'm going to be playing that here over the next 3 weekends, building up to the Grand Prix in Charlotte. So I got a lot of playtesting with the Grand Prix trial coming up this weekend. Next weekend is TCG Player States. I'm going to be traveling to Tampa Bay, Florida for that. So if anyone's there that's listening, come over, tell me I'm terrible. That'd be great. I'll give you a score pad if you do. And then, the weekend after that, GP Charlotte. We're going to be hanging out, having a good time.
Yeah, man. I've been in the same thing I'm going to do, but for standard, because I'm setting up for your GP Minneapolis at the end of this month that I'll be going to, which is standard. So if anybody's going to that GP, you can give me a shout out and tell me how handsome I am, because I'm not like Rob. Mm-hmm. Don't suck.
Whoa, hey, but you are prettier than me.
It's the beard. It's not your fault.
I know.
But I've been playing Green Black Seasons Past, and that deck is sweet, man. Like,
yeah,
I just can't get enough of it.
How'd you played in game day this past weekend, right?
I did. I won.
How'd you end up doing? Oh, nice. There you go.
I don't go and play game days. However, I play the deck on Modo more than I do in paper, and I just finished it in paper. So I was like, I actually want to play some games. So I went up to the local game store. We had about 16 people or something like that. We just did 4 rounds, no cuts, just undefeated at the end gets it, which was me.
Nice.
But I honestly felt like I was playing a different format than some of the jankier decks I came across. it was brutal, man. It was not even fun for my opponents and stuff. But
oh man, but at least it gives you another feel. Hopefully, you played a couple of the more staples that you might not run into on Modo.
Right. No, it helps with those early rounds at a tournament where you're playing against some stuff and you have to figure it out on the fly.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly. There was a match where I didn't have Duress or Transgress, so I just fired off an Infinite Obliteration in the dark against my opponent, named a card that wasn't in his deck. It was a card that should have been in his deck, but he just didn't have the budget for, so I missed.
Oh, okay.
I still won, but...
Oh, there you go. That's the only issue with the earlier rounds in your major tournaments or doing your game day events, your states and things like that, is you'll run into decks that aren't fully built out to what you expect, and you can whiff.
Yeah. Or just get caught up by something that's not normally in there.
Right. Sure. Now I know Chris, he went on a mulch spreading expedition this past weekend.
So I didn't even know that.
I know that was good for him. Yeah, no. He went up to the DC area and I asked him, "Oh, you playing in a tournament?" "No, I'm going to go spread mulch."
Oh, that's right. I knew he went up to his mom's. I didn't know what it was for.
Yep. No, spreading mulch.
Nice. And I know Jerry also won game day.
Nice.
Yeah, awesome. He was playing a Jund version of Seasons Past, which not really like the Dark Petition Seasons Past loop, just Seasons Past for value. Because that card's just good.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, it is great. I mean, 6 mana and you get to draw up to 5 cards out of your graveyard, maybe 6, depending on what he's running.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely games where I just have like 0 through 5, and I'm just like, yep, 6 cards, please.
Nice.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. So also, we had the first Modern Open of the season this weekend.
Yes.
Did you catch any coverage on that?
I was bouncing back and forth between that and GP Toronto, but we'll get back to that. But no, I definitely want to keep up with the modern scene just because that's going to be the main thing I'm playing over the next month. And it was interesting to see the top 8 that came out of it. Not surprised. We had 3 Abzan Company in the top 8.
Yeah, it's definitely the deck to beat right now.
Yeah, so that's definitely the one that I need to be focusing on. Happy to see Infect made the top 8 there in 6th place. And an interesting thing to note about Infect, it is running the blue sorcery spell from Oath, Slip Through Space.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty common now. It's better than Distortion Strike because it replaces itself.
Right, yeah, and I also like the fact that you also get to draw a card with it. That's always good.
Yeah, so I mean, it replaces itself. You get to draw the card there, yeah.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah, but there's some controversy at this open.
Did you see
there's a guy, Charles Porges? I don't know. I'm bad with names.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, he was the zoo player. that was doing very well, and he got DQ'd. It's still under investigation, but what he got called out for was his opponent was watching him shuffle, and the top card wouldn't move. So Charles just said, that's just how I shuffle this. I've always shuffled. If the top card doesn't move, I apologize. It's just the way I shuffle. But people were hyping on him because of the recent, I mean, it's a little further in the past now, but the shuffling issues where, you know, the guy would pick up his opponent's deck to cut, look at the bottom card, see it's something he couldn't cast or as a land and a bad card, put it, thumb it to the top, and then just never change his position. So it's kind of the opposite of that.
Gotcha. Well, hopefully Wizards does a good job at sorting this out. And I mean, if he's being honest about the way he shuffles, hopefully it's just a minor issue and we can get past it.
Yeah, but I mean, if he is cheating, like, his opponent called him out, so that's good. He noticed that, like, hey, your top card is not moving every time you shuffle, which is very good on him for looking. You know, that's not always something you catch.
No, and it's sad that you have to be vigilant for cheating like that, but you have to.
I mean, it's a game where you shuffle cards, so there's manual dexterity involved, and, you know, there's multiple, you know, fake cuts and tricks and stuff you can do with cards like that.
Yeah. Not giving you guys any ideas of what you can do to cheat.
You can find them on the internet. Look them up on YouTube. I'm not going to condone it, but it's out there if that's what you want to do. But if you get caught, man, like, good luck. Oof.
Yeah, I was going to say, people face hefty bans for that. They don't take it easy.
Nah, it's like 3 years. But, I mean, maybe you could find a way to magic out of that, too. I don't know.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, learn to get handcuffs or something. Who knows?
And then the other one came out of the Legacy Classic.
Mm-hmm.
It was Chris Anderson. He got disqualified for unsportsmanlike conduct and aggressive behavior.
Yep. Having a bad day on tilt. Just decided to slam some chairs around.
Yeah, I was reading a couple of the Reddit reports and people chiming in. It's like, yeah, it's a couple tables or a couple seats down. And he slammed the chair so hard that they saw like a couple decks fall over and things like that.
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, I know you probably had a rough weekend. I saw a back and forth between him and Jeff Ooglin on Twitter. And apparently just everything that could go wrong did. He wasn't winning any games. His grandfather had just died. But I still don't think that's anywhere near legitimate for the behavior shown at these tournaments, especially when you're someone like Chris Anderson. I mean, you're a well-known player. You're a pro. You're setting an example.
Yeah, no, and like, hey, even though he doesn't, like, he writes for Star City occasionally, so like, he might not be a Star City employee, but he still represents them in a way.
Right, yeah, I'm wondering if there's going to be any repercussions from them or not on this issue.
I mean, I could go either way. That's going to be between, you know, Chris and them, but still, like, right. it's not good.
It's
one of those you have to, like, maintain your composure, man. You just got to... Like, yeah, it sucks that you have stuff going on, but like maybe you just didn't play that day, you know? Skip it. Yep. Like, it's not going to be the end of the world.
Exactly. But one thing out of this open I did like was SCG Live on Twitch.tv. They did a viewer's choice for top eight. And what it was is if you're a subscriber, then you were able to cast your vote for which match you wanted to see for the top eight. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't know. I think it's sweet. I didn't catch it. I was watching GP Toronto, which we're going to get to next. Once again, I'm focused more on standard right now. But
right.
No, I think that's a great idea. It's kind of sucks that you have to be a subscriber. Like, I don't want to pay Star City $5 to cast a vote for this. But, I mean, that's a whole different thing. But it's sweet that they're trying to get some opinion out there. Maybe this can go further into just, you know, multiple feature matches, because they have backup feature matches, so it's possible they could ahead of time know, oh, we're going to show this guy and this guy, these are the matchups, do you want to see what we're going to show you, or do you want to see this one of these backup matches?
Right, and one thing I'm curious about is the second place match. Do they become the backup feature match, or is it the match that they would have chosen to be the feature match if their chosen one did not win?
I mean, that would be for them to decide and kind of go through and figure out. But no, it's a nice thing moving forward for sure. It's new and getting people involved, which is always good.
Oh, yes. All right. Now let's get to the tournament that you are most excited to watch this weekend, GP Toronto.
Yep. Standard. Like I said, that's what I'm focused on right now for a Grand Prix for myself. So I was, you know, I was trying to hone in on what other people are playing and stuff. But shout out to Josh. I'm not even going to try to pronounce the last name again. Going 15-0. Zero buys, first Grand Prix ever. Just rocking it.
Yeah, no, that's huge. And they were saying it's been a while since they've had someone actually play the full 15 rounds and go 15-0.
I mean, at that point, you just try it to see if you can, right? When you're 13-0, yeah, you can double draw in, but you might as well go for a record, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Let people know you're not messing around. I mean, I personally would have drawn it. I want the last two rounds to kind of like, you know, start de-stressing and try to focus on the top eight and stuff like that. But
right. Now, he did end up losing in the first round of the top eight.
Yeah.
Which, you know, that's pretty sad. But still, I mean, top eighting your first GP in 15-0, that's massive. That's great.
But like I said, that's the difference. I would have not played the last two rounds and focused on the top eight. But
right. And I mean, that probably would have, I mean, it might have helped him out a little bit had he been a little bit more rested. But I mean, hey, congrats to him still.
Yeah, and running a pretty sweet deck too. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, what was he running?
Black White Eldrazi.
Ooh.
Kind of, they call it control. I mean, it's more mid range in my opinion. Like, there's not a lot of kill spells. It's only like seven. Well, then Declaration of Stone, I guess. It's probably like 10 kill spells, which is pretty light for like a control deck. It's more of Eldrazi is Spacer, Wasteland Strangler for value because he runs a lot of things to exile, Anguished Unmaking, and Transgress the Mind and things like that. Thought Not Seer. So he uses the Wasteland Strangler better than anybody has in the past. And then runs a Smattering of Planeswalkers and Gideon Omnixilus Sworn. Just kind of controls the board. And he has the built-in combo of Secure the Waste and Oesso Abbey. So.
Yeah, no, that's those two cards together. That's just, I mean, again, it's one of those things of did Wizards know what they were doing when they printed Westvale Abbey while Secure the Waste was still legal?
I mean, as many times as this has come up, like watching coverage and stuff, Westvale Abbey doesn't get flipped too often. I mean, obviously, when it does, it's a problem and it usually closes out a game, but it's tokens are pretty easy to manage right now, I think.
Right.
To, you know, keep a board state down to where they just never hit that critical mass of five things to sacrifice.
Especially while they have that mana still open, because, I mean, we've got, what, Kozluck's Return out there, we've got Radiant Flames.
Languish. The green-black controls, like me, run Virulent Plague in the sideboard.
Oh, okay.
To just say no. Like, right. I don't even mess with this. Like, yeah, they have Anguish and Making to get rid of it, but they still have to get rid of it and not something else, you know?
Right.
But also in the top eight, I mean, there's another white dominant. 7-8 were white. We had the white-black Eldrazi control, green-white tokens, Grixis control, the only non-white. Mono-white humans, green-white tokens, Naya tokens, other white-black control, and Esper dragons.
Yeah, Esper dragons ended up taking it.
Yeah, they did. I mean, it's a good time for control right now.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And
I think it's that time in the format where people have determined what the aggro deck is, so you know how to beat the aggro deck as the control player.
Yep.
Which, I mean, and the controls are just naturally good against midrange, so.
Oh, yeah. I really like this Esper Dragons list, too.
I mean, it's pretty straightforward for the most part.
Right.
Very reminiscent of the Pro Tour list. But, I mean, it's still white dominating. That's still crazy that, like, moving forward, I think green is one of the better colors. Like, Bant Company and Duskwatch Recruiter and things like that are just so much value that I don't know what white has that's keeping up, but apparently they're doing a good job.
Gideon, Ally of Zendikar, that seems to be the main card here. I did the count on it. It's, I don't know, probably not too outrageous. 20 out of 32 spots were taken by Gideon. So he's definitely spattered amongst a majority of the decks in the top eight.
I mean, Gideon's strong. I think Gideon's stock has fallen for the most part with things like Reflector Mage and Declaration in Stone to clean up tokens and things running around. He just doesn't seem as dominant as he's been in the past. I mean, he's definitely good for like staying ahead. Like, your opponent has to play catch up to answer the Gideon. So like Ruinous Path, you still have a 2/2 that can attack and do things. Or if you can answer all the tokens with like Languish or something, the Gideon just pluses and bashes you for 5 every turn. So it's still very good. I just don't think it's good as it has been in the past.
Nah, it's I think when he first came out, he had a stronger showing than what he is now. But I mean, if you're running white, you might as well have Gideon, Alev, Zendikar in there.
You got a on color planeswalker that's really good. You're gonna run it.
Yeah, on Duskwatch Recruiter though, I mean, he's been skyrocketing in his appearances, and amazing card at that. Yeah,
he's 250 for an uncommon. It's pretty good.
Yeah, that's really good. Last time we saw uncommons up there was Stoke the Flames.
Yep. No, I mean, it's a very dominant card, and it's very good at what it does, because we've talked about it before, where it's just its own self-engine, where, you know, he finds more creatures and he makes them cheaper. Like, that's just a sweet synergy with itself.
Yeah, I made the mistake. I let him live for a turn in a game, and, oh man, just the amount of stuff that came down was brutal.
Yeah, especially I like the Bant Coco, because they can collect a company at the end of turn, hit the Duskwatch Recruiter, and then have it immediately flip on their turn.
Yep.
And then just dump their hand, like, ugh.
Yeah, no, that was very painful for me, and I learned immediately that he is something to take care of.
Yeah, and then also you get these nice interaction where when he flips in response to his flip trigger, you get to activate him before he does. So it's especially nice out of Coco, like I said. End of their turn, he comes in. On their turn, he flips, but they just pay three. Let me get this extra creature. Now he flips, and now that creature is cheaper as well as what was already in my hand.
Right. And then on a side note for Standard too, I'm looking at the classic results right now. Mm-hmm. Again, five out of eight had white. Two, the other two were green, red, ramp, and then the green, black aristocrats.
Yeah, I'm surprised that deck hasn't seen more on these, like GP Toronto and stuff. Like, it obviously was a very good meta choice for the Pro Tour. People weren't expecting it. I wonder if it's not holding up in the Grand Prix, like in all those rounds, if it has some bad matchups or what.
Right. Yeah. Cause, there were two in the top 16, but still it's a strong deck, and I'm like you, I'm surprised there's not more, but
it's also a pretty cheap deck, which is usually something that people tend to pick up as well.
Yeah, I know. If I can pay less than $300 for a standard deck, I definitely want to do that. And
green black, I mean, $300 is a standard of old. This standard's way under that. That was when your multiple fetches and stuff like that was a very expensive standard. This has come way down. Like at the most, you need a playset of $20 cards for the most part.
Yeah, true.
I mean, it adds up, and they're still they're back to the standard of like $200 to $300, like in that price range, rather than the $3 to $5 we've seen in here shortly. You know, in the past,
that was a terrible time. And then Jace Vryn's Prodigy was in there too, and yeah, Dex almost $700.
Yeah. No, so that's also a very nice break to get more people back into Standard at a good time to really, you know, power out this format.
Oh, yes.
And like I said, we talk about it in another one, too, where, like, the Oath of the Gatewatch Standard just kind of got lost in what was happening in Modern, and there wasn't a lot of events, so we didn't get a lot of decks out of that. We didn't see any shakeups. Then we had this rotation, and now we're seeing a lot of new decks. There's innovation. You know, at this top eight, there's two green-white tokens and two white-black controls, but the white-black controls are slightly different. So essentially, you know, you have six different decks in the top eight, which is sweet.
Yeah, no, I do really like the diversity that we are starting to see. And going forward, it's going to be great, because you might build towards beating one deck, but you might have opened yourself to as a weakness to others.
Yeah, which is very... it makes for a good format. There's never, you know, I mean, obviously right now, I think green-white tokens is still the deck to be. There's two in this top eight, and it won the Pro Tour, and it's a very, very good deck, just because it attacks at a different angle. Like, even if you can Languish and Radiant Flames to clean up all the tokens, they still have Planeswalkers doing Planeswalker things.
Yeah, and that can be a very big issue if you have very few interactions with Planeswalkers.
Right. No, this format's sweet, man. I'm excited moving forward. I'm excited about, you know, Grand Prix and stuff coming up. Keep playing more. Yep.
Oh, yeah. No, June's going to be my standard month. Right now, it's Modern May.
Fair enough. I mean, I'm enjoying some Modern, too, but just not as much.
Gotcha.
So, we're coming up here. You got anything last throw on the end here, Rob?
No, not so much for news. I'll save that for the closeout.
Gotcha. All right, so we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back talking about where's the innovation. Welcome back, everybody. Part two here, we're going to talk about kind of where's the innovation, you know, where's the beef? There's been several cards unbanned in both Modern and Legacy that just haven't done anything. So I don't know if it's just a sign of maybe they shouldn't have been banned, or are people just slow to hop on these cards? What do you think, Rob?
Yeah, no, when I got back and I heard that Ancestral Vision was unbanned in Modern, I was concerned, actually, with the kind of power that was going to give Blue. But really, if you look in Modern, there's not a lot of it around at all. And I was confused. It's like, well, I thought this was unbanned. And then I heard, you know, a conversation here and there of people playing Ancestral Vision. It's like, oh, wait, no, it was unbanned. It's just it's not being used. I think it is that people are just so in on their decks right now that they want to give it a try, but they're worried that it's going to disrupt the continuity of the deck, or they'll lose its like its edge or something, and so they just want to keep with the cards that they have now.
I mean, that's a common theme in Modern. People play what they have. Like, it's very hard to metagame at a Modern tournament because people are just going to play what they have. They're not going to, you know, invest the $1,000 to swap a deck the weekend before or anything like that. So people that weren't playing Blue before aren't necessarily just going to immediately jump to Blue because Ancestral Vision was unbanned. I think it's more of the people that were playing Twin and things like that have the Blue-Red shell built, that now they have Ancestral Vision and they can put that in there.
Right. And I mean, it really hasn't even, like, decks haven't been performing too well either with Ancestral Visions. We have Michael Majors got 16th with Grixis Control. He's running the pack of before. And then Trevor Pentico got 31st with a mono blue taking turns, also running four Ancestral Visions.
I mean, that was just from this weekend. Like, in the past, they've had a couple of their control decks try. And most notably, also, Daryl Ayers ran in the sideboard of Scapeshift because in certain matchups against like Inquisition and Close Luck and stuff, he wanted to have it to draw cards to catch back up.
Mm. Okay. Yeah.
So, but it's still not just been, it just hasn't been out there, man. Like, and then Thopter combo as well, because Sword of Ink was unbanned. I mean, Jerry Thompson was championing the deck for the past couple weekends, but there was not one in the top 32 of this, the Modern Open.
Yeah, no, that's also, you know, just kind of shocking, if you will, just because, I mean, that Thopter combo, it's great. It's an amazing combo. You're almost always going to have a Thopter out there with Sword of the Meek on it and being able to swing away.
Yeah, for sure. It's just very little investment. It's these two cards, like, you don't have to have anything else. So it can slot into tons of decks and things.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's definitely, I think, underplayed. That combo is really good. Sword of the Meek was banned for a reason. They thought this combo was too good. It was out of impressive, oppressive deck at the time of Thopter Depths, because you had this combo and the Vampire Hex Mage Dark Depths combo. But Dark Depths is banned, so we don't have to worry about that.
Right.
So I don't know if it's gonna fit into a deck like that again.
I don't know. I'm kind of worried about this deck because right now for the deck I'm running, I have three sideboard answers. I have six total sideboard answers for it. But if you destroy Sword of the Meek, it's still going to come back as soon as another 1/1 hits the battlefield.
You never destroy Sword. That's not how you do. You always go after the Foundry. But nonetheless, though, like, maybe people just thought it was going to be big, so they've sideboard hated out of these metas, maybe. People right. are like, I know Pithing Needle has come back up in value because of this combo, because it shuts this combo off. Also, Planeswalkers were getting played again in Modern and things like that. And Pithing Needle just catches random things that is good. So I know it's come back up in sideboards, but I don't know if that's enough.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, it's moving forward and, you know, just continuing on in that as people get more and more comfortable with playtesting it and then finally taking out to a major tournament, your Opens and your Grand Prix, and that'll be interesting to see if this pops up a little bit more.
Yeah, I'm just surprised at the... I thought maybe Modern would move a little faster. Like, I know Legacy doesn't move fast. That's a very...
Yeah.
You know, play your deck. Like, you're never going to change. It's such a big investment to change a deck. And also, it's a lot of knowledge lost. Like, Legacy is very know your deck format, so the more hours you have logged with your deck, the better. So I understand people are going to hop around there, but I thought Modern was a little more fluid than this.
Yeah, no, it is weird to see the stagnancy that, you know, we kind of do see with Legacy.
I mean, and, for sure, but I'm used to it a little bit more in Legacy. Legacy is very play what you have, I guess. But Modern, like, we just had two huge shakeups. At the beginning of the year, we had Twin Band, Summer Bloom Band, and then the Eldrazi Winter. And now it's like we just fell in this lull where it's Abzan, Company, Burn, and Infect with some Scapeshift splattered in. It's kind of the meta.
Yeah, those are definitely the decks you need to be honing for. And why we haven't seen anything else. Now, maybe we will coming up here soon. We don't know. We just had the Modern Open. And we have another Modern GP coming up, and we might see more things get shaken up. But those are the three big ones that I'm always seeing in top eights and top 16s, and the main ones that I'm gunning for to try to beat.
Right, right. And then we could also talk about Legacy. We had two cards recently unbanned at Legacy, which is also very rare. It doesn't happen too often. Like, getting unbans doesn't happen too often. First one's Black Vice, which, if people may not know what this card does. So it's a one-cost artifact, one generic, and when it enters the battlefield, you choose an opponent. And at the beginning of the chosen player's upkeep, Black Vice deals X damage to that player, where X is the number of cards in his or her hand minus 4. So this card pains the opponent for having cards in their hand. The reason it was originally banned as a one-drop, it was just too powerful. Now, this wasn't in Legacy as you know today. It was type 1.5 at the time. Which is just kind of extended, you know, because it just wasn't that many sets out at the time. The reason it was so good then is just there is no other one-drop cards worth playing. And also it was colorless, so every deck could run it. And also, decks were slower. Like, your payoff cards just cost more. They cost like 5 CMC to really, you know, pay off. So they weren't casting these things. So if you just Black Viced on one, cast it on turn one, you're going to hit your opponent for potentially, you know, 10 damage before they finally get down to 4 cards in their hand. And that's just, you know, too good at the time.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, and by that point, you're hitting your game, your phase 2 of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And you have your creatures now hitting the battlefield too. So not only is he concerned with that, but he also has that Black Vice out there where he has to keep his hand count low.
Right. There was often a time too where this was just a lot of decks were just play a land, Sol Ring, play 2 Black Vices, pass. Opponent immediately takes 6, plays a land, maybe has a Black Vice of their own to play and passes back. You play a land, do nothing because you don't care, send it back, they take 6 again, and just the game's over in like 3 turns.
Right.
So just made for now, these games that just Wizards didn't want to see.
Well, what do you think prompted that, other than just a quicker format and us having a few more one drops and two drops and that we can empty our hand a little bit quicker? Why do you think they decided on ban Black Vice?
I think that's like you hinted on there, and we're gonna dive deeper into it here. Is the format is quicker. Like Legacy is very fast format because you do so much on very little mana. Like Legacy as a whole is the most powerful, cost efficient cards you can play. So like now we have more cards that cost 1 CMC that can also deal a lot of damage. We have Delver, Nimble Mongoose, Deathrite Shaman, Goblin Guide. So like we have these other things that do as much, if not more, damage than Black Vice ever did. And your opponent is playing multiples of these very quickly and dumping their hand, so Black Vice just doesn't get turned on as often.
Gotcha. And then we also have one of the latest cheap destruction cards for artifacts too, in Abrupt Decay.
Right. Abrupt Decay is very popular in anything in black and green, runs, you know, multiple copies in every format that it's legal.
Oh, yes.
And that was something that wasn't around when Black Vice was in its heyday, you know. There just wasn't that interaction.
No, and I mean, as many people already know, too, but for those who don't know Abrupt Decay, it's also uncounterable.
Right.
And that's a big thing with that one.
Yeah, I mean, there are still decks in Legacy where your opponent isn't going to dump their hand and you can punish them with Black Vice. But then those decks that are amassing cards in their hand are usually also like combo decks, and they're going to find their combo and just kill you.
Right. Yeah. Examples are like lands, dredge, things like that.
Dredge doesn't keep too many cards in hand. I was thinking more like storm and stuff like that. They're just going to assemble their massive cards in their hand and just dump them all and go.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, there's just not, it's Black Vice isn't going to do as much damage as it has in the past, for the most part. All right, so the other card that was unbanned in Legacy is World Gorge Dragon. So for those of you that may not know, it's 3 generic, 3 red for a Nightmare Dragon creature. That's a 7/7 flying trampler. When World of Greater Dragon comes into play, remove all other permanents you control from the game. When it leaves play, return all removed cards to their owner's control, so that which is you. So the way this works is you would use Entomb and Animate Dead. You Animate Dead the World of Greater Dragon, which was used for two things. One is just a huge creature, and then also is an infinite combo. So the way it works is when World of Greater Dragon comes into play, you exile all your other permanents, including Animate Dead, because it's an enchantment. So then you get to float the mana from your lands if you have, if they're not, you know, tapped. Animate Dead leaves play, so therefore World of Greater Dragon has to be sacrificed. When World of Greater Dragon sacrifices, the lands of Animate Dead come back into play, which you get to retarget World of Greater Dragon in the graveyard with Animate Dead, bring it back into play, tap your lands for mana, rinse and repeat, cast the next spell, win the game. But now, Show and Tell and Reanimators and things like that have Grizzlebrand and Emrakul, which are just better. Like, it doesn't. You don't have to have this third combo piece of an X spell in your hand. You just reanimate Grizzlebrand, draw seven cards, and you probably have reanimate and another target.
Yep.
What do you think, Rob? What do you... do you like Grizzlebrand more, or do you think this deck could still exist?
I do like Grizzlebrand more, just because the Show and Tell combo, it does rely on potentially one less piece, that piece being the X spell that you want to cast for the one. Because with the Sneak and Show combo, that's the deck that I run in Legacy, aside from Infect. It's that pay 7, draw 7 is huge, and generally you are going to hit your Emrakul, you're going to hit, the other spell that you really need to win, and even just one Grizzlebrand out on the battlefield is going to do great with his lifelink. If you Show and Tell him onto the field at the end of your turn, you can pay 7, draw 7, or if he goes to get destroyed or exiled, then you can pay 7 and draw 7, and that just reloads your hand to get you either a sneak attack or another Show and Tell, and just to help fuel your main drive, which is to land the big creature and get your Annihilator 6 out as quick as possible.
Yeah, no, it's just the drawing seven is just so crucial there, because Reanimator or, you know, Sneak Attack or whichever version you're playing is just very all-in. It's,
yep,
I'm going to cheese this big creature into play and hope it's good enough. Which, exactly, if it's Emrakul, it typically is good enough. But with, you know, World of Greater Dragon, if you don't have the X spell in your hand, like, you're just not doing anything. You have a 7-7 Flying Trample, which is sweet. It's a good beater. And it can definitely attack in and stuff. But with Reanimator, drawing seven cards will find you another Entomb, another Reanimate, or, you know, the next creature you need to close out the game.
Right.
So this one just has seen no Legacy play either. I feel like it just got outclassed.
And I think that was the reason that Wizards felt it was safe to unban World Gorger Dragon, was that seeing what was out there, it's not going to be as overly oppressive in the format. It's not going to shake it up to the point where now World Gorger Dragon is everywhere. So no, I think it's a good move because it opened up for a potential deck. It's a shame to see that it's not a deck.
I mean, it's not even really like a potential deck. It's an already existing archetype, just a different take on it that requires an extra combo piece. So it's just, yeah, a more elaborate deck that already exists, which is never going to pass.
Right.
Which is unfortunate. I mean, the card's sweet, and it's old, and it's kind of got that, like, Magic heritage to it, you know? But, like, it's just not good in this day and age.
Yeah, no, that's from Judgment.
Yep.
It's been a while. Yeah, that's a good time.
Yeah. But so I want to talk about some potential uses for these cards. We've kind of touched on it a little bit here, but I like to innovate. I like to brew. I like to play, you know, what I think is a fun deck. Like, when push comes to shove, I'll play the best deck in the format when I need to. But I still like to have fun. And I really like Ancestral Vision. And I've been playing it in Blue Moon. And it's been great for me. And I'm just kind of like, there was a Blue Moon in the top 32, I think top 16 even, of the Modern Open. And he wasn't running Ancestral Vision.
Huh.
Yeah, so I find it very odd that maybe I'm alone here. Like,
right,
if you remember back in our cast when it got unbanned, I just didn't think it was going to be good enough. I didn't think it was going to be fast enough. I was wrong. You can very easily cast an Ancestral Vision in Modern. I'm just I just want to know where my other peeps are. Where are the other people trying to do this?
Yeah, no, that is interesting. And, you know, it seems like it would do well. And from what you were talking about, it sounded like that you were playing with Ancestral Visions before, right? Didn't you try it out in a couple different events?
Yeah, no, I've played it a couple times in Blue Moon. I played it in States, where I got 12th on Breakers, and it was great. I got paired against Infect, which is usually an extremely fast matchup, and I resolved an Ancestral Vision, and it felt great because I got to reload my hand with burn spells and get me out of a tight spot. Like, it's very doable. It just takes a certain kind of deck. Like, it's either going to be a deck that stalls the game out and to make sure it can live to turn five to you know, get the three cards off and get the payoff of the card, so that puts it into control, or a deck that wants to cheese cascade into it, which doesn't exist yet.
No.
I mean, it has existed in the past. And it exists in Legacy with Shardless Agent. But that's just not the same thing in Modern. It's very hard to... In Legacy, you get Brainstorm, so you can set up the Ancestral Vision. Like, oh, I drew an Ancestral Vision. Let me Brainstorm, put it back. There's a top card, cast Shardless Agent. Oh, I hit Ancestral. Imagine that.
Right.
So, like, there's no setup in Modern. You can't do that. So if you want to cascade into it, you have to play a 3-drop cascade spell and then have nothing under 3, like Living End.
Mm.
And there's just not a deck that wants to do that. Maybe there is. Maybe it's out there. Looking to you, fellow brewers. But the old thinking caps on, I'm sure it could exist. I'm not for sure what shape it would take.
It would definitely be interesting to see the kind of shell that they would want it to go into. And I know you mentioned Blue Moon, but Grixis Control, too. I think you brought that one up as well as a potential shell for this.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what Michael Majors was running in this weekend. And I really like it because it allows... The problem with control decks in Modern has been the whole time is we just don't have hard counter spells. We have Mana Leaks and Remands and things like that are more tempo-based. You know, Mana Leak in the late game is bad. Remand doesn't actually counter anything. It just buys us a turn. But Remand buying us a turn to get to Ancestral Visions makes it better.
Right.
You know, it gives us a payoff for buying these turns and things. And also, in older formats, I find that the threats very much outweigh their removal or answers for them. Like, they're very threat-based formats. So being able to, you know, dump our hand of all the removal we have and then being able to draw a bunch of cards to catch us back up, you know, to give us more removal for all these threats that we have to answer is very nice.
That is definitely a big thing with it. And just with its draw power up, you know, looking at this list, I pulled up the top 32 list that you talked about from Modern Open. It would do great in here.
Oh, in the Blue Moon version?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, he was all in on Thing in the Ice, you know, designing his... Like, he was running Think Twice, so that way in one card you can get multiple triggers off a Thing in the Ice counters.
Yeah.
Which is fine, but I found Thing in the Ice to underperform. Like, I tried it out in Blue Moon immediately, too. For that reason, I thought it was very good. But that was the same, you know, the same week that Shadows of the Innistrad became legal... And Ancestral Visions got unbanned. So that Friday at FNM, I ran Thing in the Ice. And then that Sunday, I played a Modern tournament and I ran Ancestral Vision. And I'm not playing Thing in the Ice anymore. Let's put it that way. No, like I was very not sold on Ancestral, but I am now.
Yeah. So,
and that's why I'm surprised that it's not seeing play. It's the same with Thopter combo. Like, that combo is so just... dominant.
Yeah, and it's its own archetype too. That's a great thing about it.
I mean, I think that's part of why it maybe hasn't seen play is because it's its own archetype. So people don't have cards that maybe overlap. Like, they have to create it from scratch. They don't want to, you know, brew a deck and take it to an open a lot of times unless they've had a lot of testing with it.
Right.
Or they want to see what the pros and stuff do first and kind of piggyback on them, which is fine.
Well, but, I mean, so I don't have a lot of experience with the combo, but it's mainly just Thopter Foundry and Sword of the Meek, right?
Okay.
So those are two cards that go together. So you got 8 cards there. Lantern Control,
Yes, Lantern can easily slot this in, so that way they don't have to go into the, you know, Pyrite Spellbomb, you know, loop to try to win that way with Academy Ruins if they don't want to do that, or if they're worried about actually closing out games, in case, you know, there's certain matchups they just can't win with the mill plan. Like if your opponent's running, you know, through the Breach, so they have Emrakul in their deck, you can't, like, you have to try to strand the Emrakul in their hands.
Right.
And that's just asking for a will to hurt, you know, your opponent Emrakul that their deck is designed to cast and stuff. So no, it's very, I don't know. Lantern once has like an alternative win con.
Okay.
But that's also a very not popular deck.
Yeah. Do you think it's just people are overly cautious about trying out this Doctor combo, that they haven't seen it perform well at higher tournaments, so they don't want to try it out themselves?
I think that's a lot of it too, is just people aren't brewing. And people obviously brew all the time, but the brews aren't just making the breakouts like they have in the past. You know, Patrick Chapin hasn't come out and ran, you know, Thopter combo. Like, that's kind of what I'm waiting for. Let him innovate it.
Come on, really, Patrick.
You know, set the standard for what it should be.
Right. Yeah, because it definitely seems like something that can easily be abused, especially if you end up with a couple of the Sword of the Meeks in the graveyard. That's not legendary, is it?
No.
Oh, there you go then, yeah.
No, it's very easy to, like, and it's hard to disrupt combo as well, because, like, Scavenger Ooze can't hit sword because you just, act, you know, sack a different artifact in response and try to re-trigger, get the sword back and things like that. And then also, if they blow up a foundry, that's fine, but you still have a sword sitting there, so as soon as you rip another foundry, you're just back online.
Right.
You pretty much have the Pithing Needle. So it's very reliable. Like, once the combo is online, it's gonna go. It's just, I don't know, maybe there's just not a shell for it right now.
Hmm.
But then we can go into Legacy and talk about Black Vice.
Ooh, yes.
So, a deck that wants this is Stasis, because Stasis used to be an old standard deck, and if you don't know, Stasis costs one blue, has a cumulative upkeep of one, and you don't untap. Like, neither player untaps. Ooh. So, what you do is, you play Howling Mind, because Howling Mind makes your opponent draw first, so they're one card deeper into their deck than you. So they're always going to mill out before you. Howling Mind allows you to draw extra cards, so you can find a land every turn to play a land to keep paying the upkeep on Stasis. And then you get to a point where you find a Boomerang, you Boomerang your Stasis at the end of their turn, you get to untap, pay one mana to recast the Stasis, now you have access to a bunch of mana, and your opponent is still locked out. So, you can rely on that to where, like, oh, I'm just going to mill my opponent. But if your opponent draws to something important, like Abrupt Decay to kill a Stasis or something like that, like, that's a world of hurt. Because you allow them to draw so many cards, their hand is just pure gasoline because they're playing lanes every turn. And right. To, you know, actually build up to casting something. So if they ever get to untap, they're just going to crush you. But Black Vice is actually a win con in that deck, because they're going to have seven cards in their hand because they can't cast anything. So they're going to be taking damage every turn to actually kill them.
Nice. Yeah. I mean,
Stasis is like a tier 5 legacy deck. It's not good. Especially with like Abrupt Decay and stuff running around. But it's still out there, and maybe somebody can, you know, rework it, make it viable again.
Again, Brewers.
Right. And also, you can run like a Sphere Prison with Black Vice, because it's an artifact. So you can run, you know, Sphere of Resistance that makes all artifacts cost one more, and Transphere makes everything cost less than three, you know, cost three. And kind of build that style prison deck, like Shops and Legacy and Vintage, I mean. Which also, oh, okay. Shops and Vintage may be interested in this card now that Lodestone Golem is gone as another win con.
Yeah, well, it's not completely gone. They restricted it.
Restricted the one, sure. If you hit your one, you're going to feel great, and if you don't, you're going to cry. But I don't know if it's easy enough to say that this is a for sure thing, but I mean, it's foreseeable.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, I'll definitely be curious to hear Jerry's thoughts on how Black Vice might be able to fit into Vintage Shops.
Yeah, and for World Gorger. Sorry, man.
Yeah, no, I think the train is gone.
You know, you're like an iPhone 2. Like, you're just so out of date. You know, you're the flip phone.
Yep, and you break easily.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, there's just too many good cards out there with the Tarko, Gristlebrand, Emrakul, which just too many nice big creatures out there that I would rather play instead of Warg Order.
Yeah, and that's why I like you mentioned the Tarko there, like as the exact same stance of, you know, 7/7 flying trample costs one more mana, but there's not a drawback of sacrifice everything you have, you know, remove it from the game, and then the upside of dealing 5 damage and stuff when it comes in. So.
Oh yeah. Yeah, no, definitely much more pluses than what Warg Gorger could have. Even just the additional piece for the combo, I think that's what really kills it for me, because in Legacy, you need to be quick.
Yeah, you can't take much time trying to build up, you know, your hand. Obviously, there's matchups where you do that, but for the most part, you just want to jam it as fast as possible and hope your opponent just can't interact.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's pretty much going to do it for us this week. You got some closing thoughts, Rob? What do you got?
I guess closing thoughts for this is mainly for Modern, because the Legacy events are a little bit on the downhill. But guys, go out there and brew, especially with Thopter combo and with Ancestral Visions. Get out there and play it. And keep an eye out. Keep an eye on our website, www.thesnapcast.com. We are finally updated with all of the latest podcasts out there. Keep an eye on our YouTube channel, too. We're running around with new things. I think it's going to be great, and especially as we get more videos out there, it's going to be a lot of fun for you guys to watch, listen, and hopefully learn something, too. That's at youtube.com/thesnapcast. And then also check out our Twitch channel. Yes, we've done nothing with it in a while, but again, with the summer coming up, my time at work is about to plummet dramatically, thankfully. So when that happens, we'll be streaming more. We'll try to get a schedule set up for you guys, and we'll do our best to hold to it. And if not, we'll update our Facebook page to let you know. But that's going to be at twitch.tv/thesnapcast. And that's all I have.
All right, for me, I'm just in the same boat, man. Like, I want to see some sweet brews. I want some innovation, you know. Patrick Chapin, where you at? Hit me up. I want new things. Like, that's what excites me. Like, that's what I love about Magic, is just the new things, the sweet little tech, the spice. Like,
oh, yes.
That's my favorite part. So I'm looking forward to see more moving forward. But that's going to do it for us this week, guys. Thanks for listening.
Oh, snap.